May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Today is Sunday next before Lent, and the second lesson in particular reflects the fact that this Sunday marks a turning point in Jesus' ministry. As Jesus' appearance is transfigured on top of the mountain, his identity as the Son of God is confirmed, and Jerusalem and the cross beckon. And as Lent approaches, we also face a turning point, a chance to acknowledge all that prevents us being the people God created us to be, to turn around and refocus our attention on loving God with all our hearts and our neighbor as ourselves. We heard of Elijah this evening and of Jesus, Peter, James, and John. Where does the memory of the life of Elijah the prophet and the life of Jesus of Nazareth touch? What might this mean for us in our own discipleship? Elijah spent time on and in a mountain. He's associated with wonderful exhibitions of the power of creation and wind, rain and earthquake and flame. He's also associated with the sound of sheer silence as he encounters God not in an earthquake nor in a whirlwind, but in the stillness. And in the stillness, he was drawn into a relationship with God, leaving his safe little place in the rock and standing outside. God strengthened him to continue his own prophetic worth of speaking truth to power. In the second lesson, Jesus, Peter, James, and John had also spent time on a mountain. As they were coming down, that's where our lesson began, as they were coming down after the transfiguration. This refers to an experience the four of them shared when they saw Jesus with Elijah and Moses and saw something of the glory of God. And they were all reminded of Jesus' identity as God's beloved Son. And so on the way down from this awe-inspiring experience, Jesus told them not to tell anyone about it until after he'd been raised from the dead. The conversation which followed and their interpretation and memory of it associated Elijah with John the Baptist. The role they were given by God was similar: to realign people to what was most important, to call human beings into living in ways that they were created to live. And the season of Lent begins with the remembrance of Jesus' time in the wilderness, his chance to listen to God, to get, if you like, realigned or aligned, to gain strength for the journey. For it isn't just the glory of the transfiguration of Jesus, nor the dramatic earthquakes and whirlwinds of Elijah, but a life lived fully, which is about the faith which is necessary to know fulfillment and blessing and courage for all that it calls of us. Jesus' friends were, Matthew tells us, greatly distressed at the thought that Jesus would be killed. They didn't understand about him being raised. Otherwise, they would have been quite elated at the promise of something so dramatic. They were distressed at the thought of suffering. And it is to suffering that we turn our faces as we approach Lent. Jesus, and before him Elijah, knew what it was to suffer. What it was to suffer misunderstanding, what it was to be ostracized, what it was to be hunted and afraid. And they each found their strength in their faith in God. They both had those full and frank exchanges with God common to all of us when we're uncertain of what God is doing, when we're afraid that what we have to endure might actually be too much for us. They had faith in God that made these exchanges possible, and their faith wasn't based on an understanding that things would always go well. They had faith in God, full stop. This is highlighted in the story which both Mark and Matthew put in the middle of this transfiguration event and the conversation which followed. A man with a desperately ill son sought healing. Jesus' disciples could do nothing to restore the boy to health. Now we know that epilepsy is not caused by a demon. What the story gives us is not an explanation of illness, but that the boy was made well. His condition was gone. That's the public face of what happened. But privately, Matthew tells us, they really needed a word with Jesus. Where Mark tells us that Jesus told them, nothing is impossible for God, Matthew writes that what Jesus said was more personal. Nothing will be impossible for you. Not that you can do it, but you have faith in the one who can. Another mountain is used for an example, this one which can be moved by faith alone, not faith in one's own power to move mountains, but faith in God even as little as the smallest seed, which leads not just to examples of great physical power, but also over power over one of the most frightening of human conditions. It was God who transfigured Jesus, God who spoke to Elijah in silence, God who healed the little boy. For Elijah, for Jesus, and for Jesus' disciples, mountains represented a place of both fear and exhilaration, great beauty and also isolation and confusion. And as Lent begins, our disciplines will take us to places which are a bit like mountains. Whatever we've decided to take on for Lent, we've decided to take it on because it involves a degree of personal discipline or self-denial. If it's effective, we may well even have forged a new way so that our Lenten discipline doesn't stop at Easter, that we might be changed through the whole experience of being in one of the scary mountain places, if you like, out of our comfort zone. When big, important things happen, be they good or difficult, we can't process them straight away. We need what comes after and the memory of what went before in order to put the experience into context. This is what Jesus gave his friends when telling them not to talk about their mountain experience. Wait, he said. Wait until you have more parts of the picture, until you can make a bit more sense of it. Elijah's mountain experiences would culminate in him being bodily received into the presence of the Almighty. But first, he had the mountain. Jesus' first mountain experience, those 40 days following his baptism, culminated in the hill of Calvary and his resurrection and ascension. But first he had the mountain. And the mountain experience of Peter and James and John would be followed by the death of their friend, the crushing of their hopes, the fear for their lives, and then the resurrection of their beloved Jesus. But first, their mountain of Calvary, and others besides. Each of us begins a Lenten discipline on Wednesday, and we suspend for a time our life living in the resurrection of Christ, and we put ourselves alongside Jesus of Nazareth, as he taught those who follow him what faith in God is like, what faith in God accomplishes, and what faith in God demands. And we stand in a both-and place and pray for the faith as small as a mustard seed, in which God strengthens us in our discipline, encourages us in our service, inspires us in our learning, and challenges us in our complacency. May we and all Christian people know Jesus as our companion, as we turn with him towards the cross and learn again how to truly love others in our service and to have faith in God when the mountain is exhilarating and beautiful and when it's dark and lonely and frightening. Amen.